Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back here on WCCO, Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake tonight, and joining me from Utah, I'm sorry, Jess Myers with the Pioneer Press. Jess, I can't say joining me from Utah to talk about the Minnesota Wilds game without laughing that there's a hockey team in Utah. How strange.
I don't think anyone has ever said that before. 100-year history of WCCO radio. I've got to be a pioneer here, pun intended, because it is Utah.
Out in the Western Desert to talk about the Minnesota Wild playing the Hockey Club of Utah. And they stink, right? They're not good, Jess?
Well, they're okay. They've won two in a row. Oddly enough, here they are in this new place, new home, all this excitement. And they're not very good at home. They're a much better road team for whatever reason. Although, that's kind of been the MO for the Minnesota Wild this year, too. Only two losses on the road at this point in the season. So something's got to give tonight. Two good road teams battling in Utah's building. Yeah.
All right. Well, Utah, I do know this, that their offense has not been all that. Their scoring has not been all that impressive this year. And the Wild, defensively and goaltending-wise, have been one of the best teams in the NHL. Why do you think that is, Jess? Why do you think that the Wild have gelled together as a defensive hockey team?
That's the easy part, or not the easy part, but it seems like that's always square one when a coach takes over a new team. And it's been a little over a year now since John Hines came in, as a reclamation project. The Wild were a mess last November. They brought him in. The first thing they want to do is get the defense in order, and they certainly seem to have done that. Now, as a defensive unit, they've had some ups and downs just for the simple fact that Jonas Brodin is one of the real veterans. Is out of the lineup for God knows how long now. Mm-hmm. They lost, a couple games with Jared Spurgeon early on. Playing defense in the NHL, I always say this, is maybe one of the worst things that you can do to the human body over a long term. So, you're always going to lose defensemen here and there. But with all of that said, they're getting great goaltending, not only from Philip Gustafson, who, we spent most of the summer thinking he was going to be traded because Jesper Wallstedt was the future. Gustafson stuck around. He's been fantastic. And then Marc-Andre Fleury, when they've thrown him in there, he had one regulation loss. That was the other night in Los Angeles. So, when you're getting good goaltending, that's a real, real big part of the equation for any team.
Yeah. How much in your mind are those tied together? Because I've always felt like save percentages are really a team stat in a lot of ways. I mean, not completely, not if Dominik Hasek is your goaltender and your team's no good and he's the best ever. But when it comes to your average goaltender, most of the time they sort of blow the way that the wind is going with how the team is playing. Like, what is it that Hines has done with this team to support the goalie?
The big thing that you get, I think, when you have good goaltending is you get defensemen that can play a little more relaxed brand of hockey. Mm-hmm. They don't think every shift, boy, if I screw this up, it's going to end up in our net,
right?
Because they have trust in their guys. And I think that's the biggest thing that they've gotten this year is just kind of that renewed faith in the guys who are back there. I don't know if that's necessarily anything John Hines has done, although he does talk a lot about the structure that he's tried to put in place. And, that's one thing, one of the other writers covering this team has pointed out, John Hines deserves a lot of credit. There's not a lot of talk about him for like coach of the year or anything like that, but he took over, a team that was a mess last year. And with essentially the same team this year, granted, they've been a little bit more healthy, but we are looking at an injury report that includes Matt Zuccarello and Joel Eriksson-Ek right now. Two guys that have played significant minutes on the top line are out for the foreseeable future, probably until after Christmas. With all of that, he's done some pretty incredible work.
Jess Myers covering the Minnesota Wild in Utah as they play a team in Utah. Joining us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. I wanna ask you about this.
No nickname yet, by the way. No nickname, so we have to just keep calling them the team in Utah.
What should they be? The Sharks? Like the Utah Jazz? They don't have any Jazz out there. They don't have any Sharks. They should be the Sharks.
The rumor we keep hearing is they're going to be the Utah Yetis, you know, the whole Bigfoot theme, which would probably bother the folks in Colorado because, you know, they've had the Bigfoot logo on their jersey with the Avalanche forever. But, you know, and to me, I don't really buy this. They announced on like April 15th that they were moving to Utah. And immediately they said, you know, we don't have time to really put a logo together. Oh, come on. You have like 4 months, you know, give somebody, MS Paint or one of those programs, and they can come up with one in about 20 minutes. You know, so the cynic in me says this is just a ploy because they'll sell some more jerseys that say Utah Hockey Club this year, and then a year from now, or a little less than a year from now, they'll come out with a new logo and a new name, and then they'll sell a whole bunch more merch. You know, I know how it works. We're not dummies here. Come on.
I hope they do better than when the Washington football team went to the Washington Commanders, which was one of the cheesiest names I've ever heard in my life. So I wish them the best of luck there in Utah. Yeah. I want to talk about this young Russian guy, Kaprizov. You know, I'm starting to think he's pretty good, Jess. I'm coming around. I think he's pretty good. I was talking to our mutual friend, Dane Mizutani, also at the Pioneer Press, the other day. We were talking about him and where he's at in his career. Clearly one of the best players in the entire NHL. But what we were trying to think of, Jess, you like stuff like this, is comparable players for him. You can find comparable players for him skill-wise, and guys who score and guys who, you know, create spectacular plays. But he's got an edginess to him that I don't know how many guys are that skill level who also want to do the dirty stuff as well. Give me something here. Do you have comps for him? Like, what do you make of the way that he has continued to elevate his complete game?
I do like that, and I like the fact, too, we mentioned the injuries of the top-line guys. I like the versatility that Kaprizov has shown this year. It's like, plug whoever you want at center, plug whoever you want at wing, and it seems to work out for him. I mean, the great line we heard the other night, they beat up on Anaheim, and granted, Anaheim is not a very good team, but that night in Orange County, he was paired at center with Marco Rossi and at the other wing with Matt Boldy, and the three of them were just magic together. I mean, they just clicked that night, you know, making tic-tac-toe passes and setting up plays. Well, Jakob Trenin, who hasn't done anything before that game, he finally got an empty net goal. We asked him after the game, what'd you think of your top line? He said, they were too fast for my brain to process. I couldn't keep up with it. You know, that's kind of what you want to hear. I mean, let's face it. We haven't had a superstar in the history of this Minnesota Wild franchise that can compare to this.
Right.
And what you're getting from Kirill Kaprizov, you know, that he's legitimately being talked about as a candidate for MVP in the league, that, you know, he's got 17 goals to this point in the season, you know, just ridiculously. And you know, the naysayers will say, well, yeah, he's got like 5 empty net goals. Well, you know what? Here's the thing about empty net goals. They win games. That's a big deal. And to Kirill Kaprizov's credit, you see him at practice. At the end of practice, he'll sit on the red line and shoot at the empty net. You know, he realizes this is a game clincher in most cases, and if he can do that, that's a good thing for your team. So criticize him all you want, but when you're hitting the empty net and winning games, it's kind of working.
Well, I also think if you look at his career shooting percentages, he's always such a high percentage shooter. It's not like his goals are lucky. I mean, yeah, you can add some empty nets, but he's going to continue to score. I think that his creativity with the puck has to be up there for some of the most creative players that I've ever seen with it. I mean, how about, it's almost like if you put some wheels and some grit with Thomas Vanek, remember the things that he used to do with the puck? I feel like it's that if the guy could skate way faster and was tougher. I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, he doesn't have the size that Thomas Vanek
right,
had. I mean,
right.
Vanek was always blessed with that big frame, but, man, I tell you, come summer when Kirill Kaprizov stands on top of his checkbook, he'll be towering over everyone because, you know, the contract is coming up and the owner of the Wild has already said nobody's going to offer him more money or more years than we will. Well, talking around the NHL, you know, a month or two ago, they were saying it might be $10 million a year. Then it was $12 million. Now people are talking it might be $15 million a year for 8 years to keep him in your jersey. But, you know, I think there's no reason to think that he's going to want to bolt anywhere else. You know, he's made a home here. I really think that he likes what he's doing with Minnesota, especially if this team can go on kind of a fun, you know, playoff run this year, which we haven't seen in a long time.
No, we have not. And he's the type of player that actually can get you out of the first round because he can carry a team. But, you know, we're going to have to see that to completely believe it. I did want to ask you about one other player, Brock Faber, when it came to the contract in the offseason. And we know here in Minnesota, if you sign a contract, we have to talk about it every single day forever and how that's matched up with expectations. Maybe he could talk to Joe Mauer about that. But it seems to me, Jess, that he's lived up to it and more so far this season.
Absolutely. And you talk about a guy, you know, I covered him at the University of Minnesota. He stepped from college hockey into the NHL with absolutely no break-in period at all. He is a guy who will never see an AHL rink in his career, barring something, you know, weird happening with an injury or something like that, where he has to go on a rehab assignment. But what he has been able to do back there, and being a local kid, you know, being a Minnesota hero, a guy that fans can buy the jersey from, has been just perfect. Now, Bill Guerin will point out the big, you know, $68 million contract doesn't kick in until next season. So he's still coming relatively cheap. But the fact that they went and locked him up on a long-term deal, and then the fact that they're trading for guys like David Juracek, who's still got some work to do. He's going to be down in Iowa hopefully for about the next month, I would think, kind of getting up to speed with what the Wild want to do. But they're talking, you know, thinking long term. They're playing the long game here as far as, you know, wrapping up some young players right now and kind of building the future of your blue line. That's kind of fun to see if you're a Wild fan making that long term investment.
And every time someone gets paid, I truly, Jess, pray for them. I said, just like, man, I hope that this guy lives up to the expectations, because if he doesn't, you know that he's going to hear about it for the rest of time. But no, I mean, he's a franchise changer, I think. To have a player like that that solidifies that position, they're just so hard to find complete players back there that when you have one, it changes everything. Last thing for you, Jess, and I won't ask you about how to fix the Buffalo Sabres because I'm talking to a human and only God knows that answer. But compare the Wild to me to the best teams in the West. Like, how many teams would you take right now? And I know we're super early. We got so long to go. But they're at the top. So are they actually the top team in the West?
Okay, Matthew, you know me a little bit. You know what football team I follow more religiously than any other, that one in purple. And let's face it, that takes a lot out of you over the years. So there's a natural kind of pessimism that sneaks into your way of thinking about anything about sports. Here's what I'll say about the Minnesota Wild. Points-wise, they're absolutely the number one team in the West right now. But, look at their record versus some of the best teams in the West. Los Angeles, they're 0-2. Winnipeg, they've had their struggles with. Dallas, they're 0-1. I mean, the other usual suspects in the West, head-to-head, they haven't done very well. They've beat up on the Anaheims and the Nationals and the Chicagos and the Vancouvers and these teams that aren't quite there yet. And you should. You absolutely should do that. And they've played very well on the road. But at some point, you're going to have dust up with Dallas or with Winnipeg. You're going to have to find a way to beat some of these teams and say, hey, we're not just the best points-wise, we're the best head-to-head. So that's still coming, hopefully, when they get a little healthier in the new year, and we'll see how that matches up.
All right. Jess Myers, well, I'll be following your work over at the Pioneer Press. Hope you're enjoying the new gig. I know you're loving it, for one, because you get to make
all expenses paid trip to Utah in the winter. Come on.
Who could have asked for anything else? Well, they're playing Utah, and you'll be there. So I wish you the best time tonight at that arena. I am kind of curious to see just what it looks like and what the crowd is like. So have a great time, and thank you for your time of being the first person to ever report on a hockey game in Utah on WCCO, this historic radio station. So thank you, Jess.
We made history tonight. Good to talk to you, Matthew.
Yes, we did. Thanks, Jess. Put it in the next 100 years. You know, they did the 100 years of WCCO. I think that the next 100 years should start with this moment of a man reporting on a hockey game in Utah. I don't know why that makes me laugh so much, Chris. It just does.
Well, I mean, when you think about hockey hotbeds, surely Salt Lake City, I mean, the middle of Utah, if that doesn't get your juices flowing, I mean, there's not a whole lot flowing in Utah anyway because it's a dry state, but nonetheless.
They were in Phoenix before, Glendale, actually, before. So it's not like they moved from, you know, someplace like, say, Minnesota to Dallas or anything terrible.
I know, right? Or, you know, Hartford.
Nothing like that. Anyway. Right.
But they do have snow, so I guess that's what they've got going for them, which is nice.
So we're
going
to talk some basketball coming up at 8 o'clock, but I need to get your reaction to the no-box Christmas where my in-laws and my parents on opposite coasts, we just got so frustrated with sending boxes and ordering online and trying to track who got what when, who wants who what where, and we just weren't enjoying Christmas that much. But it does take something away because we're not really giving away gifts. So I need to hear what you think of that, Chris, when we come back. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Chris, I mentioned before we went to break that we have, as a family, revamped how we do Christmas. Take the money that you would have spent.
Take the money and run.
Yep, on other people's presents and chasing down boxes. And shout out to all the great people at the FedExes and the U.S. Mail and the Amazons and all those things that are working hard in the holiday season. Want to take a little bit off their plate, just a tiny little bit, by not buying people presents online and having a bunch of boxes shipped because it became much too stressful to track everybody's presents, everybody's boxes, everybody's lists. And I just decided, you know, we could do something a little more meaningful, which would be write Christmas cards to each other and say something nice or festive rather than just here's a box and you get what's in it. And then take the money that you would have spent and spend it on yourself and do something that you like. Is this sacrilege to our capitalist gods of America or a good idea?
I'm all about boxes because step one, cut a hole in a box. Okay.
This is going step in two. A weird way already.
Okay. No, I understand. It's weird because I think that people feel like there's an obligation to give a gift. And if you're not giving a gift that you don't have to worry about, you don't have to track it, you know, because then you've got, you know, damages. Is it going to get there? Is it going to go to the wrong place? You've got all of these things that can go wrong. You know, 99% of the time things are fine. But you do have a little bit there. You know, that's a risk that you take. But when you're talking about money and gift cards and things that you can spend on yourself, you know what is going to bring you the most joy. Like, to me, when people are like, what do you want for Christmas? I'm like, I don't know. You know, I don't really need anything. What do I want? I don't know. Maybe I'll know when I see it. So I totally understand. I totally understand where you're coming from. I mean, boxes are good because it's always fun to open a box.
Yeah, and pop the little, you know, the what they wrap stuff in.
Oh, the bubble wrap?
The bubble wrap, yeah.
Oh, pop, get freaky with that bubble wrap.
Yeah, that's always a good time.
I mean, yeah, but I understand. I think it's a good concept. And if it's a way to make your Christmas unique, then go for it. That's something that you guys have, which I think is also kind of cool.
I also decided that I am a grown-up, and I just don't need this. Like, if I want to buy something, I'll just get it. Right? I mean, it's at some point, and I know that's not financial situations or whatever dependent for whether you could just get yourself something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could just, with Purple Insider's budget, get a Ferrari for Christmas if I want to. Maybe I'll get two, like those people in those commercials.
I mean, it's happy Honda days.
Yeah, right.
I mean, if Sloan can't come back and see a Ferrari with a bow on it, you are doing it wrong, man.
I am not allowed to make decisions like that. There is no world where any man.
Do you not celebrate happy
cars.
Honda days?
Yeah.
You do not celebrate happy Honda days.
I celebrate everybody however they want to live, but there is no American gentleman who has a wife who is just buying two cars and being like, see what I did? I don't care how much money you have. She has to go with you to buy those cars.
Well, that's why I don't understand. That's why I don't understand. Like, those ads are playing during football games, and I'm like, who do you think you're catering to? I mean, do you think we have, like, $45,000 disposable income? I mean, I don't have $45 in my checking account, let alone
That's dark.
Well,
But the whole point just being that I think that I wish we did it earlier to kind of reevaluate what we're spending our mental space on during the holiday season.
Well, so, and you got to do things that put you in a good headspace, because right now, like, things, we're in kind of a weird time in, and we'll blow up by the night because we're like 3 minutes away from break. So we'll just, I can save that for tomorrow. But we are kind of at the point where it's like, if it makes you happy, do it. Because so many people are living through day to day and just all of the stress and anxiety, whether it's financial or family, or you're worried about, you know, employment, this and that and the other. We need to find, I don't want to call it a safe space, but we need to find something that can just make us happy, because everybody deserves to be happy in life. And if going out and, you know, having a little fun and, you know, as they say in Parks and Rec, treat yourself, then go for it. Go for it.
Well, we were for so long doing things a certain way because we had just always done it that way and never reevaluated it to what would make it easier. And especially my wife travels for her job, and she was taking on a big part of this. How can I make sure every family member on both coasts gets exactly what they wanted? Is it going to get there? Who are we ordering it from? How are we doing it? Is this the exact thing they wanted? And at some point you go, is this really, doing anything for each other here? Is this making anybody happier?
You're doing it just to do it.
Right. We're doing it because we always did it that way.
Yeah.
So that is my small piece of advice, is to reevaluate. Don't be locked in because that's how you've always done it. That's your tradition, whatever it might be. Maybe be creative. Find your own tradition this holiday season. So anyway, let's take a break. Do we have football? Is football next?
Apparently, I put some football on there. So, yeah.
Great.
I mean, apparently, you're a football guy. And
yeah.
I'm going to ask football guy football questions, and we'll see how that goes.
Love that. We'll be right back.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now, Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The weather has been kind of weird, you know? The other day it was so cold and terrible, and then it was sort of pleasant. And then that sounds like the same arc we're going to be on for the next few days. So we will see what happens with that. But we've got football to talk about, and Chris Tubbs has not prepared me on any of these football questions. But you know what, Chris? Life has prepared me for these football questions. So what would you like to know from me, Matthew Collar, football reporter, about football?
All right. Well, I put them on the document, but I know that you never look at the document.
No.
Which is great, because I can put everything there for me for podcasting and technical things.
Yeah.
And I know that I don't even have to worry about
it. Nope. You don't have to sort through it.
No, sir. And by the way, our buddy Stoner, wishing you and yours a blessed Toyota-thon.
Oh, thank you. Don Stoner, who every time on TV Stoner. I see him on the sideline, the Wolves games, I get annoyed because that means there's a review going on and it's taking too long and I am displeased. So hope you're doing well. Don Stoner.
Yeah, Stoner's one of my favorites, man. Stoner's a good dude. All right, let's get to football. You started the show with it, but I want to get your official position. Matthew Jonathan Collar? No, not Jonathan?
No.
Matthew, you know what, never mind. I'll do some digging.
You get
later.
There eventually. It's a fairly common name. But
okay. What should the Vikings do with Sam Darnold?
I think, if he continues to play like this, well, let me make an analogy here. This is sort of like asking, hey, how do you know whether to ask someone to marry you? And the answer has to be, you just know. And I think it's the same thing with Sam Darnold, that if you're going to sign him longer, whether it's franchise tag or extension, you'll just know when that time is. Let me tell you, the other day, US Bank Stadium, it felt closer. It certainly felt a lot closer when the guy is putting together one of the best games ever played by a Minnesota Vikings quarterback. But there's four games to go. There's the playoffs to go. This is not answered yet. And I feel that the answer will present itself. If they win the Super Bowl, then actually, who even cares what they do at that point? Mm-hmm. Just build the statue of Sam Darnold and whatever. The next 10 years are free after that. But there's a lot of different scenarios that could play out. There's, you know, he struggles down the stretch. There's he's incredible down the stretch. There's he goes to Ford Field in the playoffs and beats the Lions. Or doesn't he plays really well, but they don't win, and then what do you do? I think that this is going to answer itself eventually. But all I want to say is that I think people are too terrified of paying a quarterback because of what happened with Kirk. But when you just watch those two on the same field, did they look similar to you? I don't remember ever seeing Kirk make those throws, make those plays out of structure. And this is a guy who has all this talent to be a former top draft pick. This is what he's supposed to look like. He's supposed to be this good. It's not some random pop-up guy that they got out of the CFL and he had a good season or something. This is what it's supposed to do. So don't be terrified. Lots of teams have paid their quarterbacks and they don't have their franchise immediately go in the tank. That's what I would say to them.
So you say, let it ride.
Let it ride.
Let it ride.
We got about 6 weeks.
Let's see what happens.
To know where they're at in the playoffs. Let's see what happens down this stretch and enjoy the ride until then. And we'll all probably have a good sense of the answer by the end of the season. When the Vikings walk off the field for the final time this year, I think most of us will know that they're either bringing him back or that they're going to move on to J.J. McCarthy.
Well, I like to say, not here for a long time. I'm here for a good time.
Well, that's how it could be for Sam Darnold.
Hey, Sam Darnold, he's our good time Sam. So here's another question. Started out the season white hot. Had the little, the little downtime in the, games against Jacksonville, Tennessee, whatnot. Five touchdowns, better than anything Al Bundy's ever done. MVP chance at the end of the game. You've got Josh Allen. You've got Saquon Barkley, who's on pace to break Eric Dickerson's rushing record. That's been, hasn't been broken since, set that 1984. Should Sam Darnold be in the conversation for MVP?
In the conversation, yes, but it's going to take a lot more for that to happen. Just in the same way that Jared Goff's in the conversation for MVP, but it's going to have to take a lot more. What Josh Allen is doing is without any star wide receivers and a team that is in transition. They traded for Amari Cooper. That's nice for them, but that's not Justin Jefferson or Jamar Chase or something. And he's had to put that team on his back. He's such a dynamic runner and playmaker that they're where they are in the standings because of their quarterback. Whereas you could look at Goff and look at Darnold and their environments are very, very favorable. Justin Jefferson is as valuable of a player in the NFL as exists. If Saquon breaks that record, it's really hard not to give him the MVP. I think personally that there should be kind of a most outstanding player instead of MVP, because quarterback is always more valuable than every other position. If you took out Sam Darnold and put in Nick Mullins, they would have probably 5 wins or 3 wins instead of 11. And if you took out Saquon Barkley, someone else could run behind their offensive line. So it's a tricky discussion. There is no player that is just throttling the league and running away with the MVP, though, which means if Sam Darnold played the next 4 games the way that he's played the last 4 games, then yeah, then you're talking about winning 14 games and being right there in the MVP conversation.
And that's why I think Saquon Barkley is so interesting, too, because, we know that running backs, wide receivers, I mean, it's a quarterback award. Kind of a piggyback off of that, this isn't on the sheet, but how dumb is it that a guy like Sam Darnold can't be considered for comeback player of the year? Because you have to be injured out of the league. Like, Sam Darnold is not eligible for comeback player of the year because technically he was in the league, but a completely different scenario.
Yeah, and isn't this the change to the rule because of Flacco winning it last year?
Yeah.
he didn't actually come back from anything. I've always felt that that should be a injury, because there's so many injuries in the league. It should be a, this guy missed the season with injury and then came back and played. That
like a Nick Chubb sort of thing, yes, hypothetically.
That's the way that I would do it. Or DeMar Hamlin not winning, that is unbelievable to me, and then instead them giving it to Joe Flacco. So
yeah,
it's okay. Sam Darnold didn't come back from anything. He just came back from
being awful
starting last season.
Okay. So we could potentially be looking at a Vikings Lions matchup week 18, depending on what happens this weekend between Detroit and Buffalo. I'll get to that in a minute. Do you see that last game of the season being for home field in the NFC? I know you get Philadelphia in the East, but I mean, right now it looks like all roads could potentially go through whoever wins the NFC North.
You're right. Yeah. Possible, maybe coin flip chance. It's hard to say definitively because the Vikings are going to play a very downtrodden Bears team. You never can really count them out when the Vikings are playing the Bears. A lot of weird stuff tends to happen,
especially at Soldier Field, but thankfully that's here.
But then after that, it's Seattle's a really good team in Seattle, tough place to play. Then the Packers come here. That's a good team who could beat you. And then you're playing Detroit. So if the Vikings lose another game or two, then yeah, they're probably out of that discussion. But if they win and get to 12-2 and then beat Seattle, then there's a very good chance that Detroit will lose at some point. I don't think Detroit is going to finish this season 16-1, especially with all the defensive injuries. And Buffalo is going to be looking to bounce back from what happened last week against the Rams. So you know they're going to be locked in. It's going to be bad weather. That plays to their favor more, I think, so than the Lions. I think there's an okay chance of it, 50-50, but it does feel like the Vikings have played with a little bit of fire in recent weeks, and that one of these games is going to go sideways on them.
Okay. So we got a couple of really good games this weekend. One of them is the battle between the Eagles and the Steelers. I think that's going to be fun. But obviously people are looking the late window on Sunday. Lions-Bills. Here's my question to you. Is this a Super Bowl preview?
Very well could be. The AFC is hard, though, because Buffalo showed last week that they have some flaws. They do not have their clear-cut superstar number one wide receiver like they had with Diggs. Their defense has some flaws, as we saw against the Rams, that they were susceptible to a great quarterback making plays on them. And the Chiefs are still alive in the world. And it, no matter how much it seems like Buffalo is the better football team throughout the regular season, the Chiefs tend to have their number in the playoffs every single time. I wouldn't count Pittsburgh out for the conversation either. I think if you were doing percentages, you would probably give Buffalo by far the best percentage, but the other teams are all kind of equally distributed, like the Chiefs, the Steelers, and the Houston Texans could get hot. They have a great quarterback. They've had bumps along the way, but we can't count them out as well. So I think that it very well could be those are the favorites. But how often do the favorites end up in the Super Bowl would also be a question of mine. I mean, this year the playoffs could be more up in the air than they have been in a while.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of parity. So let's go straight to the Chiefs. And the Chiefs are 12-1. Everybody's talking about they're lucky. They're getting lucky.
Yep.
Yeah, they're 12-1. 11 of those wins have been by one score.
Yep.
Out of all of the dominant teams, the Super Bowl favorites, they by far and away have the slimmest plus minus when it comes to points. Here's my question. The Chiefs at 12-1. Are the Chiefs lucky, or should the AFC be concerned that the Chiefs have not turned it on yet? Because they lost Rashee Rice. They're going to get Hollywood Brown back. Mm-hmm. They've got DeAndre Hopkins. They've had they've had to deal with some things. They just feel like they're kind of like Golden State in the regular season. They're just kind of sleepwalking. Is that a concern to the AFC, or are we looking at a team that, it's a rabbit's foot and a four-leaf clover?
It was a similar discussion going down the stretch last year, and then the Chiefs had that kind of kick into high gear. One thing that would be concerning to me about the Chiefs is that a lot of their players have just played a million football games over the last few years. I mean, when you're in the playoffs going deep every year, you're playing way more games, way more mileage. Do they have enough in the tank to go do it again, to go to Buffalo and win, to run through the playoffs? And yeah, they have been somewhat lucky. I mean, they blocked a field goal at the end of a game against Denver to win. They got a pass interference. They got a guy's toe was barely out of the back of the end zone. Patrick Mahomes winning one-score games is not random. He will win way more one-score games than he loses. So did Tom Brady. So did Peyton Manning. All the GOAT quarterbacks are going to do
so
that.
They know how to put themselves in that situation.
Yes.
So it's not luck.
But they shouldn't be 12-1. Like, they should be more like 9-4.
Okay.
That's where they should really be. Even if you factor in for they have the best quarterback who pushes the one-score odds, there's enough games along the way. Because not every one-score game is created equal. If you are up by two scores the whole game, like they were against the Raiders, or you're controlling the game, and then the other team makes it a one-score, all right, well, that's fine. But if you're talking about you know, games where you have to block a field goal at the end, well, that is pretty darn lucky.
And I mean, the game Black Friday, Aiden O'Connell mishandled a snap.
Right, right.
So I mean,
yeah,
that's true.
That's also true. Yeah.
So there were
They were pushing to come back. So I just don't think that they've controlled games enough that I think that they are a complete enough team to be considered a favorite. But if they are playing the Pittsburgh Steelers in a playoff game, it's a coin flip or better, and you're probably leaning a little bit toward Mahomes. If they're playing Buffalo, you're going to look at the body of work and you're going to lean toward Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
So the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. They're not just complete frauds. They've got way too much talent, but they're also not your traditional 12-1 mega Super Bowl contender team.
And finally, we saw our old pal Kirko Chains came back, threw for 300 plus yards. Great. No touchdowns, couple interceptions. When do the Falcons pull the plug on Kirk Cousins?
They're probably just going to have to ride it out.
I mean, that's a $180 million mistake.
Yep. Oh, it is. And after this year, they'll have to do that. I don't know that they can bench him before the end of the year to go to Michael Penix. I suppose if they lose and he throws four picks again next week, that they might not have any choice. Considering that all they have to do is get the same record as the Bucs and they get in the playoffs instead of Tampa Bay, because they beat Tampa Bay twice. So if they lose again and he plays like that, he was really good at times and then just had those catastrophic mistakes, which is kind of what's been ailing him over the last few weeks. But
he did have that. It's like the one good game against Tampa Bay where he threw like 500 yards.
Yes.
And he was doing like the swag surfing thing, or
yes,
whatever it is that they do down there.
Yep, yep. And outside of that, outside of the two games against the Bucs, he's not been any good at all. But I think that when you make that big of a commitment, you probably have to ride it as far as it's going to go for a single season. And then you just have to live with it. So just be thankful it's not you and it's someone else.
$180 million for a one and done? You know,
could be. Denver's paying Russell Wilson a lot of money to be good for another team.
That's true.
That's how it goes.
All that money to let Bo Nix be your guy. All right, Matthew Collar.
All right. Thank you very much, Chris Tubbs. Let's take a quick break. We got some basketball talk coming up at the top of the hour. You can't turn back the tide. So I'm sad about something, Tubbs. A little sad. Sounds like Bill Belichick, for some godforsaken reason, is going to coach the North Carolina Tar Heels football team, which is so insanely random. But here's why I'm sad. Bill Belichick, for as unlikable as he was as the head coach of the New England Patriots for so long, whether it was the different cheating scandals or the press conferences and all that sort of stuff, just a villain of the league, since he has been in the media, is a tremendous media personality. He is dry, funny, super insightful. He loves referencing old players, which makes me happy. And he has not been afraid to actually speak his mind, which I think is something that a lot of people in the NFL are generally afraid of. When they leave the league, they've got a lot of friends in the league. They don't want to offend all their buddies. And so, and you hear this with, I think that's some of the issue with Tom Brady. The other issue with Tom Brady, who's been a horrible broadcaster, is that he doesn't seem to do any of the work. So he shows up and then just tries to call the game, but he keeps talking about his old teammates and things like that because he just has got nothing. And he can't criticize them, apparently, according to the league, because he's an ownership partner.
With the Raiders. And
Yeah. So he can't criticize the refs too much. I mean, it's just pointless. But Belichick is the opposite of Brady. He is paying so close attention to every team. He does a YouTube show with a guy who used to work for him in his front office. And those guys break down stuff, and they'll be talking Vikings sometimes and really get deep into the weeds on Viking stuff. And, you know, he hired Brian Flores, so I'm sure he's a big fan of Flores. But they'll go deep into depth, and when he's on TV, he could be funny and he's good. And we're going to lose him to North Carolina football because the guy just can't stop coaching football. And, you know, where it will work out for him is that his players can be friends with his girlfriend, who apparently is 24 years old. And that's not
weird. Well, they might be going to the same classes. Who knows?
It could be.
Yeah, maybe she's getting some sort of, like, you know, reciprocity. There's some sort of, you know, knock on tuition or something if you're dating the football coach. It's funny because, you know, Bill Belichick, you know, known as being kind of a hard ass and, you know, just kind of being, you know, mumbly, gruff, hoodie guy with the sleeves.
Yep.
But you can change the image, right? Like what he's been doing with the Mannings has been awesome to see. Patriots, Colts, Patriots. And then, you know, you see him just kind of collaborating.
Yeah.
And maybe this is just what he needed to maybe just kind of reset himself. I get the sense that some of those guys, when they're coaching, that's pretty much all they know.
Yeah, yeah. I just feel like Bill Cowher did it right. He won his Super Bowl. He worked his butt off, was a great coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and then said, I'm going to go and be in the media. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are some times where Cowher, at this point, many, many years later, is still talking about the league as if he was still in it many years ago. But Belichick was just so on top of everything. And now he's going to be taken away to coach a pretty much irrelevant program that will only be talked about as relevant because of Belichick.
But hey, North Carolina cost the Gophers a chance at like the Music City Bowl. I mean, they've got Iowa.
Make a field goal. Zoo.
I know, right?
Tough. Yeah, tough. That was must have been the highlight of North Carolina's season. They did lose their quarterback.
Brad Johnson's kid.
Brad Johnson's son, yeah.
Yep.
All right, when we come back, hoops, basketball, Mariah Carey, Chris Hine will join us from the Star Tribune. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.